Hey everybody, I'm Phil, and this is It's Del Toro Time, a Twitter-sode, because Ollie is still figuring out that school thing. So bear with me as I take you through another one of Guillermo del Toro's Twitter film recommendations that didn't make the Ecstasy of Influence list. This week, The Fallen Idol from 1948, directed by Carol Reed, based on the story The Basement Room by Graham Greene and written by Graham Greene. This is not Graham Greene's first time up at bat. If you are familiar with him as a writer, you know that Graham Greene goes back and forth between very religious Catholic stories of man's relationship to faith and also awesome spy adventures. You never know if you pick up a Graham Greene novel, especially when they're like released as like a set, like here's the Graham Greene library. You're like, is this one going to like tear my soul out or get me all excited and want to go engage in some fisticuffs and gunplay? You never know with Graham Greene. Always a great writer, always interesting, and a very good screenwriter. This is his first collaboration with Carol Reed, and it is frequently overshadowed by his next collaboration with Carol Reed, The Third Man, based on his novel, The Third Man. People tend to forget about The Fallen Idol, but we haven't forgotten about The Fallen Idol, because even though it isn't as it isn't as in your face as The Third Man is, it is one of the most unbearably tense films I have seen in recent years. It made me grip my seat. It made me bite my lips. It made me so anxious watching this movie, and not a whole lot happens. It is all about the relationships between the characters. What we have here is the story of Philip. No relation to yours truly. Philip, who is a little boy, like a legit little boy, who lives in an embassy. His father is he's like a diplomat, and his father is away collecting his mother, who has had some kind of ailment that's lasted for many, many weeks. He's a very rich boy, very spoiled. He's essentially raised by the help, by the servants in the house, and he's confined to the upstairs because the downstairs is where all the embassy business goes on. And the entire movie is shown through the eyes of this little boy, Philip, who is played by a real little boy, like not an actor. The little boy who plays Philip, Bobby Henry, is so incredible. Last time I talked about the Red Shoes, they cast actual ballet dancers in the roles of the ballet dancers, and there was a naturalism, there was a legitimacy to every aspect of their performance, because they didn't cast actors who could dance, they cast dancers who were incredible actors. And they did the same thing, Carol Reed did the same thing with The Fallen Idol. He cast just a boy, just some kid, as Philippe, Bobby Henry, who I do not believe went on to do anything else after this. The Fallen Idol, I guess he made a couple of more films, but then he was ordained as a deacon in 1984 and was an interfaith chaplain at Greenwich Hospital. So, you know, that's it. He's 80 years old, and as far as I can tell, he's doing great for himself. But his performance as Philip carries this movie. Like, it is, without his performance, this movie is not the tense thriller that it becomes. So this kid, Philip, is essentially raised by the help, essentially the butler, Baines, who is played by Ralph Richardson, perfectly played by Ralph Richardson. He's raised by Baines and Baines's wife, Mrs. Baines, who's played by Sonia Dresdell, and there's this clear distinction between Baines, who is a second father or a first father to Philip, and Mrs. Baines, who is almost evil. And I'm going to jump back to The Red Shoes. Last week, we talked about the impresario in The Red Shoes, who could have been the villain of the piece. Mrs. Baines could be the villain of this movie if there wasn't a subtlety in Sonia Dresdell's acting and her performance. She is mean to Philip. And yet, you also get the sense that she is just sick and tired of having to raise this kid, having to take care of somebody else's child. Like, she is fed up with it. And she's fed up with her husband treating this child like his own son. Baines is an interesting character. He is a consummate liar. He tells the boy all kinds of tall tales about his adventures in Africa, although you later find out that none of this stuff is true. He sort of weaves these fantasy narratives for Philip, who either doesn't realize they're false or accepts that they're true simply because he wants them to be true. What we discover, though, is that Baines is having an affair on his wife with the young secretary who works at the embassy named Julie, played by Michelle Morgan, who is another just phenomenal actor. Her role could very well have become wallpaper because Julie doesn't do a whole lot in the story. She's kind of there. But Morgan's presence is so nicely captured. The camera knows when to focus on her reactions, knows when to focus on her face. So you get a sense that she is observing things that Baines is not observing. She is seeing aspects of Philip's character that Baines is either not picking up on or is choosing to ignore. So Philip has no life outside of this house, outside of Baines, outside of his constant warring with Baines's wife, Mrs. Baines. And he stumbles upon the affair when he follows Baines out of the house. He catches Baines and Julie canoodling at a coffee bar. He's a little boy. He doesn't know what's going on. And so Baines weaves this tale of Julie being his niece who's there for a visit. But Philip can't tell anyone about it. It's a big secret. And there's this whole thing running through the whole story about big secrets. Adults keep secrets. Adults keep secrets. And if you want to be a good friend to adults, you've got to keep secrets. It's this very sinister aspect of Baines' character because he's doing something nefarious behind Philip's back, behind everyone's backs. And it's never explicitly stated because all of this is seen through Philip's eyes. But as observers, we're like, oh, yeah, this guy is cheating on his wife, who he is in a miserable relationship with. He keeps promising Julie he's going to leave his wife, but Julie doesn't believe it. She's leaving town soon. Baines has a ticking clock. He's got to leave his wife and go off with Julie, or else he's just never going to see her again. And Philip discovers what's going on. Mrs. Baines gets the story out of Philip, sort of piecemeal, and decides she's going to spy on her own husband. She pretends to go away for the weekend, but secretly she sneaks back around into the house. So you've got this... So Baines is like, oh, Julie, you can come to the house now. Nobody's here, and so we can spend the weekend together. We have Philip. He's going to be tagging along, but don't worry. My wife's out of town. Wife is actually in the house spying on him. It is super creepy, and one thing leads to another. There's a huge row between the two of them, and Mrs. Baines, completely separate from anything her husband does, he leaves the room. Mrs. Baines, in an attempt to spy on her husband, falls to her death down a flight of stairs, and that's where the real action in the movie kicks off as Philip half witnesses what occurs. He thinks he's seen Baines murder his wife. He thinks Baines is a killer already because of the tall tales Baines has been telling him. And so Philip takes it upon himself to protect Baines by lying for him. Now, Baines also is trying to get Philip to lie for him so that the police don't find out that Baines has been cheating on his wife and fighting with his wife, and he's getting Julie to lie for him. So Philip doesn't understand what he's lying about. He thinks he's lying about Baines not being a killer, which makes everything he says sound like a lie. Even though he's telling the truth, Baines, everything he says sounds like a lie because he's trying to edit Julie out of the narrative. He's not a murderer, but everyone thinks he is because they're obviously being fed tons of lies. The inspector is being fed tons of lies. The doctor is being fed tons of lies. And you have this little boy, Philip, who is lying his teeth out, and he's terrible at it because he's a little kid. He is excitable. He is in everybody's face. Everyone just wants this little boy to go away. He is annoying. He is shrieking. He is constantly demanding attention. And the closest I can come to the performance of Bobby Henry in this movie is the little boy in The Babadook, who is so good at being so irritating. You can understand why everyone just wants to be rid of this child, even as your heart goes out to him, because he's just a little kid. There's also the question of what Philip does and does not understand in this movie. Films Bobby Henry so close up and with such focus on his reactions and his face that you're allowed as a viewer to read into this boy's motivations. Is he actually a more sinister presence? Is he trying to get Baines in trouble? Is he manipulating the police? Is he simply doing this for attention? Does he want Baines to be set free, or does he simply want people to notice him? Is he simply that lonely of a child? We don't know. A lot of that is just left up to the viewer to decide. This movie is shot in So The Red Shoes was this brilliant Technicolor dream. This movie is shot in glorious black and white by French cinematographer Georges Perrinal, who did a lot of French films. He went on to do The Thief of Baghdad and Bonjour Tristesse, Once More with Feeling in 1960. A lot of wonderful movies. This movie is childhood noir. It is the shadows and the angles. You get these amazing Dutch angles that Carol Reed became famous for in The Third Man. But this is kind of leading up to that in this movie when things start going screwy and off kilter. It just, the camera just starts becoming this deranged character. The music by William Alwyn is subtle but present and beautifully used throughout the film. Graham Greene wrote the screenplay, but it was also co-written by William Templeton and Leslie Storm, who punched up the dialogue. And boy, does it show. Like, there's great interactions between the characters. It's a very character piece. The movie, with a couple of it, there's a scene in a zoo and a scene in the coffee house and a scene later on, like a brief scene on the street. Almost the entire film takes place in this incredible mansion, and the way that Reed uses the camera to shoot Philip through the bars so that you get a sense of how trapped he is. Baines is constantly talking about trying to escape from his wife, but Philip is also trying to escape from a house. These are two main characters who feel trapped by their own circumstances. Two main characters who will have their own forms of privilege. Philip, because he is the son of a rich diplomat and controls all these servants. Baines, because he is a man in a woman's surrounded by other women's servants, but he is the man, so he is imbued with more authority than them. He has more freedom than them, yet he feels trapped by his own wife. And Mrs. Baines, who becomes the victim in all this, who you were led to dislike, but then when she dies, it is a tragedy because, she's unreasonable. She is unlikable, but also she's being cheated on by her husband, who is being a complete, ham sandwich to her. He is just treating her like garbage. And the whole movie is these weird little rebellions that all add up to just this horrific tragedy. And although the movie kind of wraps itself up nicely and pats itself on the back in a way that the original short story, The Basement Room, does not do, you are still, it's almost like watching a more subtle version of The Bad Seed, just because Philip's character becomes a near malevolent presence by the end of this movie. Even as he tries to do quote unquote good, he is so out of control. You want to push him down the flight of stairs by the end of this movie. But that's an exaggeration because he is a wonderful child actor. He didn't go on to do much, but his presence is appreciated. A wonderful, great character actors all through this. From the Clockwinder, played by Hay Petrie, who has like three lines, but his presence in the movie is so like jarring. To the two house servants who's sort of running commentary throughout the film creates this little like back and forth on the action. To the chief inspector, Crow, played by Dennis O'Day, who is wonderful in his role. To the Dr. Fenton, played by Walter Fitzgerald. Everyone does a great job. Ralph Richardson as Baines is mwah. He is so good. He's so friendly and likable. Like, you feel bad for Philip, so you really like Ralph Richardson, but then he becomes darker and darker and darker as it goes along. Just everyone acquits themselves very nicely of their roles. This was Carol Reed's first collaboration with Graham Greene. They went on to do The Third Man, and then 10 years later, they went on to do Our Man in Havana in 1959. So, like I said, The Fallen Idol was greatly overshadowed by The Third Man, but it should not be forgotten. It's kind of been consigned to film history as like a curiosity. Like, oh, and you should also check out The Fallen Idol. Like, if you like The Third Man, it's a curious piece that came right before this. But no, this movie stands alone. If you watch it, I can almost guarantee it will go into at least your top 50, your top, it just, especially as far as like crime thrillers and noir films go, this movie is just, it is outstanding. It is now, like, at the time, it wasn't quite appreciated, but now it is considered, it made like the Time Out magazine's list of 100 best British films. It's about just a manipulation and betrayal. It's just such a a textured film. Such a great film to watch. Again, I was on the edge of my seat. Loved this movie. Loved it. What did Guillermo del Toro have to say about it? He said, "See it today." Top tier read. And he said this not that long ago, on May 15th, 2019. He said this on his Twitter feed. It's on the Criterion channel. There's a great Criterion transfer of it. Guillermo del Toro just, you know, he likes this movie. He calls it out. He likes all of the movies by Carol Reed. So he, you know, he comments on those. He's just, Carol Reed is a director's director. He knows how to control the camera. He knows how to direct actors. And I can see why Guillermo del Toro likes this. Also, it's about the loss of innocence. It's about the discovery that the people you worship, the people you think are outstanding citizens, all have their flaws, all have their faults. And it's about the sort of like the depravity of the human spirit and how these little mistakes we make, these selfish mistakes that we make, can lead to our own downfall or the downfall of innocence, the people surrounding us. So that's The Fallen Idol from 1948. Just a gem of a movie. Check it out. Won't you? I'm sorry. I just really enjoyed this movie. It tickled me, and it really got to me. So thank you so much for putting up with me again. This has been a Twitter-sode, not an ecstasy of influence film, but just a bang-up movie. And hopefully we'll get Ollie back in studio again. Hopefully we'll be able to sit down and watch that Kurosawa film that we need to check out, record an episode for you, let you know our feelings on High and Low. We'll see what comes next week. Who knows? But regardless, we'll see you when it's Del Toro time.